Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JML Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Matt Deitch from the Midwest Angler Podcast on the show for the first time. It's great to get to know a brand new guest. Matt represents the northern Iowa, southern Minnesota part of the Midwest, talking about the Iowa Great Lakes, for example, and that surrounding area, and he's got some great offerings on what it takes to be successful when you have big, old, kind of spooky fish in shallow, clear water conditions. And just a real fishy, real great conversation here that I think is going to pique a lot of people's interests and give a lot of people some great ideas as they head into this 2025-2026 ice fishing season. So let's get to it here. We got Matt Deitch on the JMO Podcast. The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JML Podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. As we prepare for the upcoming ice fishing season, making great gear choices is a big deal when it comes to being efficient and effective each and every time we head out onto the ice. Head to summitfishingequipment.com to check out what they've got. As a pioneer of forward-facing sonar portability, their shuttle design and carbon fiber pole mounting kit make it super easy to switch from boat usage right out onto the ice. Again, head to the website. The link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code SUMMIT10 at checkout for a discount. For a great Canadian ice fishing adventure, I highly recommend Tamarack Island Wilderness Lodge, located in Ontario's Lake of the Woods, 45 minutes north of Baudette, Minnesota, on a remote island. This ice fishing destination is very unique, very big in adventure. It's peaceful, it's quiet, it's Canadian, there's no crowds. All that paired with very excellent accommodations. They have a variety of well-furnished cabin offerings that some host up to 6 guests. This place is a multi-species mecca. The list goes on. Walleyes, crappies, muskies, pike, burbot, smallmouth bass, tulibee, sauger are all thriving in this area, and the islands and the structure is endless. There is unpressured fish and new spots just waiting for you at Tamarack Island Wilderness Lodge. Again, where big adventure and great accommodations come together, and it's easy to get to. For a visual of these offerings, you can find episodes of Jason Mitchell Outdoors Television or Sportsman's Journal on YouTube that showcase what Tamarack Island Wilderness Lodge has to offer. You can find them online at tamarackislandwildernesslodge.com. More contact information is in the description of this podcast. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast.
What would you say is kind of your life story? I mean, spend as much time as you can letting us know kind of where you're from, where you cut your teeth in fishing, and where the backstory of your fishing career, and even get us kind of up to speed with where you're at today and kind of the space that you encompass in the industry.
Yeah, well, I grew up in southwest Minnesota, a little town called Ellsworth, Minnesota. Born and raised there, grew up fishing. My dad got me into it, like most of us, and my grandpa and my uncle Richard, they took us out. My brothers and I have two brothers, Mike and Brant. And as kids, as much as possible, they got us out. I mean, anything from hunting out in the field to going down to the Iowa Great Lakes and cutting our teeth fishing there. And actually, we never really, in the corner of the state that I grew up in, actually, I still reside only 14 miles from there in Rock Rapids, Iowa, up here in the northwest corner. But we really don't have much for lakes in this area. Growing up, our closest lake was about half an hour away. The Iowa Great Lakes, Okoboji, Spirit Lake, those lakes are about an hour away. So those are the ones I kind of cut my teeth on. So we actually did a lot of just fishing in the creeks and the rivers around where I grew up too. And in town here in Rock Rapids, we have the Rock River. I grew up fishing that, and that's kind of what sparked me into this whole outdoor world. As far as like what the industry goes, about 7 years ago now, my buddy Scott Sturman approached me about starting a podcast. We have our own podcast called the Midwest Angler Podcast. And it just kind of, we got the ball rolling there, and it's just grown over the years and kind of expanded to different things and opened up a lot of opportunities for us.
I mean, how did a conversation like that go? Your buddy Scott, like, what's kind of your backstory with him, and how did those decisions like really go at that time?
Well, the backstory with Scott is I started teaching down here, and actually, or I started coaching football, I should say. And Scott was probably about a senior in high school about that time. And just, I knew who he was. He knew who I was. And I never realized that he was into the outdoors like I was. And, fast forward a few years, and a mutual friend of ours wanted to go down to the Iowa Deer Classic, and we decided to go down there. And he's like, "Yeah, the Sturman brothers are coming with us." And I was like, "Oh, okay, that should be a good time." And that's the first time Scott and I ever really hung out with each other. And after that, we just started doing more hunting and fishing together. And fast forward years down the road, after building that outdoor relationship with each other, one day he called me up. We always talked about doing something like with the fishing industry or the hunting, the outdoors industry. And he called me up and he's like, "Hey, what do you think about starting a podcast?" And I was like, "Oh, that could be kind of fun." And he goes, "Well, we are. I ordered the equipment, so we're gonna start one." So, and that's the kind of, Scott's one of those dive in head first, full all into something. And he had all the equipment ordered up, and we just kind of threw it together in his basement and started recording episodes many years ago, and now here we sit today.
Tell me a little bit about it, man. I mean, just the evolution of it. I mean, I guess I'm just kind of curious, how it was when you guys first started. What was kind of your main objective, and what was the content like? But yeah, I'm just kind of curious about sort of the story and the journey of it.
Well, it's all kind of trial by error. We were doing both video and audio when we first started off, and kind of doing the YouTube thing. And so we'd get the camera set up. A buddy of ours, Dusty, would come over and help us out a little bit with some of the videoing of it. And then we just kind of overlay our audio onto the video. And that just got to be quite a bit of work and everything like that. And we're pretty low budget. When we first started out, it was kind of like one of those deals of everybody's got to be quiet in the house. Like, if we messed up, we were just like, "Oh man, like we messed up," and we felt like we'd have to go back and start all over. But as the years went on, we just switched to audio only. That was easier for us if we were going to get guests, and we could just call them over the phone and added another mic and everything like that for it. And eventually we just kind of roll with the punches. Like, a lot of times Scott's son, 5-year-old son Slate, he's in the background. Every once in a while he joins us on the show. I mean, you just never know that the UPS guy is gonna be ringing the doorbell. And that's kind of the funness about it. And with us is just a couple of guys just sitting in somebody's basement talking, hunting, fishing. And that's kind of, coming back to where it all started. We were always just, every time we got together, we were having long conversations about hunting and fishing and all this stuff. And it was just like, well, we might as well record it. And like I said, here we sit 7 years later and still going strong.
It's not easy, man. It's not easy
No,
to
it's
be
not.
around for that long. There's really not very many out there. I mean, we haven't been around for 7 years, so I'm not even speaking from experience, but I have a huge appreciation for that because, yeah, man, I mean, you guys have been around. What do you think is kind of like, and actually just for any, whether it's TV or video content or or anything, man. The fact that, you know, you guys, you and Scott have stuck together for 7 years. There's not a lot of people that could say that they've stuck around just for 7 years doing anything together. So no, kudos to you. What do you feel like is kind of like your recipe for success in that?
Well, I think like when we first started off, we, you know, we kind of sat down and we hashed it out, and we always, you know, life happens. One of us trying to get our schedules to match up with each other. That's always kind of the hardest part, but we always, from day one, we said, you know, if we had a family thing, or if we were busy, if we missed an episode, like a week, we missed a week. We weren't going to make a big deal about it and stuff like that. And we'd come back and hit it on the next one. I think that's what really, you know, Scott's really good with like the interview part and getting to know the guests and everything like that. And I just think that we really work off of each other real well. And, you know, my knowledge with the hunting and the fishing stuff and his gift of talking and everything like that, I just think that it really is a good combination.
You know, what would you say is kind of like, you know, maybe like your specialties, or maybe some of the more significant life experiences you had? You know, you kind of already spoke to sort of the timeline or sort of your journey in fishing and where you cut your teeth. But I'm sort of curious if you've got some more significant stories that stick out where maybe you felt like you were kind of advancing or learning things as an angler, or really, really, truly developing a passion, you know, that lifelong, indestructible passion for fishing. Just sort of curious if you've got any of those sort of life stories that stick out in your mind that you could share.
Well, you know, like a lot of our journeys go, as I got into high school, I got busy with sports and school and everything like that. And you kind of go away from it for a little bit, and you do it here and there and everything. But when I was in college, towards my end of college, I started working at Shields and in the fishing department. And I felt like there I learned like a vast more, you know, a lot more about fishing, the industry and everything like that. Started working with a few guys up there that started getting me out more in the boat. And it's like, man, I need to get my own boat. And I finally did that. I actually bought a boat before I even had a truck. My brother Mike was nice enough to always let me borrow his truck whenever I wanted to go fishing. But, you know, to get that, and I really started to immerse myself into the fishing world and keep learning more, and started fishing a few bass tournaments and stuff like that. And so I feel like that's where it really, really sparked again for me to get out there and do it, and just something that I want to do a lot now.
Man, I got tons of respect for somebody that owned a boat before they owned a pickup. That's legit. That is, you would fit right in with the JMO crew for sure, man. That is awesome. That's an awesome life story, dude.
Well, I like I said, I got to give my brother Mike thanks for that one, because there'd be times I got into muskie fishing. So I'd be like, you know, the closest muskie lake was an hour and a half away. And I'd be like, oh, I'm going to go fishing. It's like, is it all right if I borrow your truck today? And he'd be like, yeah, go ahead. And I mean, it helped me. I caught a few 50 plus inch muskies just because he was able to let me get over there by using it.
Dude, that's phenomenal, man. That's phenomenal. It takes somebody with like a true passion for fishing to just live that way. And you probably weren't even thinking none of that was weird, you know? That it is. I'm not, I mean, it's like, no, that, anybody else, any other like, anybody else with, you know, just all the insecurities that we have this day and age, you know, it's like buying a boat is such a scary thing that you got to have everything else in life nailed down before you get there. And a lot of guys, man, they'll just work in a cubicle their whole life and they'll just never pony up and own a boat and get themselves outdoors, right? You know what I mean? They just let life get away from them. But not young Matt. And I love that, dude. That's awesome, dude. That's a phenomenal story. Are you a multi-species guy? Are you focused on any particular thing nowadays? Like, how would you describe maybe kind of your specialties, your fishing style, and how that has, you know, developed?
Well, if I was leaning towards one more than the other, I mean, I love catching any fish. I mean, a lot of times when we go out fishing, we could go out and say we're focusing on walleyes, but if we get on a good crappie bite, we're fishing crappies now. I mean, we kind of like keep our options open when we're out there. But there's most of the times I'm a bass first guy. I really enjoy targeting bass, largemouth and smallmouth, at the Iowa Great Lakes. I mean, they are a phenomenal fishery for both, big largemouth bass and big smallmouth bass. You can fish them at the same in the same spots at the lake. You can find them on the same structure and stuff like that. But Okoboji a lot of times sets up as kind of a deep weed line type bite. So I really like to use a spinning rod a lot of the times when I'm chasing bass out there, drop shotting and things like that, throwing jig worms and everything. But I still, when it comes down to bass fishing too, just your traditional power fishing, going up shallow or over deep weeds, throwing, moving baits and stuff like that too. But yeah, as a bass fisherman, I like to think that I can catch them both shallow and deep. I like to There's a lot of times, being a teacher, I have my summers off, so there's a lot of times that I can go over there and just take a day and learn a new technique and, making myself more versatile.
Yeah, man. And what's the like kind of seasonally here, we're kind of, I guess, in the upper Midwest, we're kind of in the early ice stages. There's a little bit of ice fishing that's starting to kind of happen. I guess I'm not sure what the status update is down where you're at, but if we were gonna kind of, talk a little bit about what the more popular, more well-known ice fishing opportunities are down there, what would the rundown be?
Yeah, well, right now we're actually on like East Okoboji Lake, some of the smaller bodies of water around that area, Spirit Lake even. They all have fishable ice. It looks
Oh,
like it's all
nice.
in that 6 to 7 range. Yeah, my dad was out last week and did really
Nice.
well. Caught a bunch of bluegills and crappies over there at the Iowa Great Lakes. It's the last, I don't know, 6, 7 years, the fishing has just been phenomenal, whether it be during the winter time or during the summer on your open water periods. But the bluegill over there, they're always so much fun to chase. The last couple of years, the crappie fishing over there has become really good through the ice, and you're catching a lot of crappies. Spirit Lake, there's always a good perch bite, and the walleyes right now are actually biting pretty well over there too. So when you come over here or down here to the Iowa Great Lakes, your options, there's all kinds of different places for you to fish on the lake. There's a lot of bays that hold just numerous amounts of fish, and you can catch bluegills all the way up to 11 inches. The crappies, some of the crappies you're seeing guys pull up some 14, 15 inches. So I mean, I like to say it's a world-class fishery, and there's yellow bass in here. Those are fun to catch when you get into a school of those. And yeah, you hook into a big largemouth through the ice too, so you just never know what you're going to catch.
Yeah, man. I mean, there's definitely some rich history. That's another reason why I'm just sort of, I just feel so behind in having these conversations about, those fisheries and that part of the world that you're in. And even like with JMO, like I remember working with Jason early on when I wasn't even like a full-time cameraman. I was just a guy riding around with him like 10 plus years ago and going down there. And we were fishing. I just remember hearing, the stories. And actually, I think Dave Gens was with us, but we were filming like an episode all them years ago. And I just remember those guys were talking about, a lot of clear water, like
Yep.
gin clear water, and big fish, but not easy to figure out how to get them to bite. When you get them to bite, you can catch plenty of them, but you really got to put the pieces together. You really, kind of got to be a little bit of a nuanced angler if you're going to travel there and figure it out. But the locals, you guys have kind of been having to deal with the whole clear water, spooky fish, like don't make noise on the ice, all those things that the rest of us are trying to learn now. It seems like was what people that grew up fishing down where you're from, that's how you were baptized into it. And so I'd like to maybe kind of tap into that a little bit. I don't know if you get asked those questions very much or if you have like, something, that you could expand on there. But I think that's true. I think that, from everything that I was exposed to in the industry in the Midwest, is like you guys are, arguably like some of the OGs of like clear water, tough biting fish, and big smart fish in those conditions, and then having to figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up sight fishing. I didn't own my first Vexilar or any type of sonar for ice fishing up until, I mean, 10 years ago, really, to be honest with you, because everything we always did was we could see the fish down there. So that's just like growing up, that's just kind of like I thought every place was like that. And like super finesse, like there's days where you gotta, I mean, most of my jigs, I feel like I'm fishing with huge jigs. If I have like if I put a 5 millimeter tungsten jig on, I feel like, man, like what am I going after here? These things are huge. Like, mean, I have 2.5 mil jigs. I have 3 mil, and usually it's a 3 millimeter jig is what I'm always using or down there. And it's always 1 to 2 pound test. So, I mean, it's a super finesse presentation all the time. And the presentation is always important. Like you got to read what the fish are really wanting. You got to make sure your nod is sitting perfectly on the eye. So you got a nice, you know, horizontal presentation with the bait down there in your lure, and just having it off a little bit, like they'll come in and they'll look at it and you'll think, all right, here they come. We always call it the Okoboji back shuffle. Like a bluegill or will come flying in, you're like, oh yeah, this thing is going to commit, and it'll get right up to it and just sit there and stare at it and like bump it with its nose and just slowly back up. And it's just like, come on. It's just it's really fun. It feels like you're fishing in an aquarium, but it's also very frustrating.
Yeah, like, you know, and I mean, I don't want to like overstate it. I'm sure there's some old timers, you know, out here that would talk about clear water in certain scenarios in the past. But I, you know, generally speaking, you know, it isn't until more recently that more and more, you know, reducing your line diameters and longer fluorocarbon leaders, or just, you know, just light mono, you know, the smaller jig presentations, you know, just being more experimental to try to battle those gin clear water conditions. And it's not just like fish seeing your line or seeing your lure, but that spooky element too. It's like being quiet, keeping your sonar out of the hole. Like, I agree with you. I think that sight fishing thing is, you know, it ought to, if it's not already, it ought to be making a big like resurgence, you know, like, you know, our dependence on electronics. You know, I think electronics are a good tool and like are kind of fun and add to the experience in certain situations, depending upon how you're using them or whatever. And maybe you could kind of expand on that, but I think that whole sight fishing thing, I mean, that's like the real OG of like learning, you know, that's where you are actually like learning about a fish and its behavior, and like you're looking right at it. So it's not lying to you. You know, you can misinterpret electronics all day long and tell your friends a story about how big a fish was and what it did. Yeah. And that, you know, you got the bite, but you missed it or whatever it is. But when you're sight fishing, like all those things, like it's not like a mystery. It's no guesswork. You're seeing exactly what's going on. And, man, just what an unbelievable education. You know, it's just like you do that for so many years and you'll have a PhD and you know what it is to get rejected by big, smart, old fish. But just to be on them and have them swim under you is another thing, like talking about the noise on the ice. But so, yeah, man, I got a ton of appreciation. Do you have any offerings for us? Like, let's just say either somebody's going to travel to where you're at, or better yet, you know, if people have a home body of water somewhere else and they're just getting kind of frustrated that, you know, the good old days are 10 years ago. Now it's hard to be on fish. It's hard to get fish to bite. All the things that you've been dealing with your entire fishing career down in some of those lakes, what would be some, you know, just some offerings for how to operate on the ice and that whole sight fishing thing? What, you know, diving a little deeper into what some of your preferences are.
Well, you know, like what I'd offer there is like, if you get kind of stuck in the same old thing, try something different. I mean, we all kind of get into, you know, like, well, this has always worked, you know, from year to year. I mean, there's times where it's like, I'll use a bait and I'm like, oh man, they're really like this ice season, like I really caught fish on this certain bait. And then all of a sudden the next year it's like, oh yeah, here we go. And they don't want anything to do with it, but you still try to like force feed them at sometimes And sometimes you just got to listen to the fish and see what they do or how they react to it and stuff like that. And they'll tell you what they want. And as far as like with learning from the clear water and stuff like that, one of the biggest things that I did is I started incorporating sight fishing with my sonar, like to teach myself more, to get better with my sonar in murky water by watching how the fish's reacting to my presentation and also seeing how it moves on your screen. So you kind of get an idea of like, okay, so like if I'm not going to be able to see the fish, I can see like, okay, this is what it looks like on my screen as I'm doing this and how they're reacting to it.
The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. As we prepare for the upcoming ice fishing season, making great gear choices is a big deal when it comes to being efficient and effective each and every time we head out onto the ice. Head to summitfishingequipment.com to check out what they've got. As a pioneer of forward-facing sonar portability, their shuttle design and carbon fiber pole mounting kit make it super easy to switch from boat usage right out onto the ice. Again, head to the website. The link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code SUMMIT10 at checkout for a discount. For a great Canadian ice fishing adventure, I highly recommend Tamarack Island Wilderness Lodge, located in Ontario's Lake of the Woods, 45 minutes north of Baudette, Minnesota. On a remote island, this ice fishing destination is very unique, very big in adventure. It's peaceful, it's quiet, it's Canadian, there's no crowds. All that paired with very excellent accommodations. They have a variety of well-furnished cabin offerings that some host up to 6 guests. This place is a multi-species mecca. The list goes on: walleyes, crappies, muskies, pike, burbot, smallmouth bass, tulibee, sauger are all thriving in this area, and the islands and the structure is endless. There is unpressured fish and new spots just waiting for you at Tamarack Island Wilderness Lodge, again, where big adventure and great accommodations come together, and it's easy to get to. For a visual of these offerings, you can find episodes of Jason Mitchell Outdoors Television or Sportsman's Journal on YouTube that showcase what Tamarack Island Wilderness Lodge has to offer. You can find them online at tamarackislandwildernesslodge.com. More contact information is in the description of this podcast. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. That's absolutely going to give you, that's a huge learning curve on how to interpret electronics.
Yeah.
Cut a sight fishing hole, or cut a hole big enough that you can sight fish when you're dealing with those conditions. But make sure if you've got a flasher or whatever you've got, put it in the hole when you can see the fish with your eyes, but you can also see what that looks like on the screen. Like I think about like a flasher, I fish with a Vexlar a lot. Like what fish look like when they're on the edge of the cone.
Yep.
When it's just a flutter, like how far away is that? You know, sometimes like, you know, understanding water clarity and how deep you're fishing. Like, are those fish on the edge of the cone? Can they see my bait? Should I be fishing higher? Whatever. If you have the opportunity in that clear water, if you're on a decent bite or any bite at all, if you just have the time, just that will give you that chance to learn and interpret your electronics, man. That's a phenomenal point, man. That's a phenomenal point. What
Yeah,
else?
you just, like I said, you just, I mean, it's just being able to see it in real time is the nice thing about it. And I don't know, you mentioned Dave Gantz coming down. I know that Dave has said before that if you can catch him at Okoboji, you can catch him pretty much anywhere, because it is, it's just a very unique bite down here. But one of the fun things too about that with the ultra clear water is bringing people out there that, you know, might not do a lot of ice fishing or anything like that, or maybe have never done it. And you're sitting there and they can see the fish down there and they can kind of have some success with it as they're doing it. But, you know, to have like a 50-inch muskie come swimming through the hole is like something that like you always remember, or even like seeing a, you know, a 6-pound largemouth come swimming through, or a 28-inch walleye. I mean, you don't get to see that a whole lot of places, but like you can be sitting there and, you know, and they look bigger obviously than sometimes than what they are, but to see one of those fish come swimming through, it's just, it always sticks with you.
It's kind of an interesting part of the Midwest where, unless you're kind of going there, most people don't ever really get too close to it.
No, a lot of times people drive right by and, you know, don't really know how good a fishing is actually in that place. And you know, just the opportunities that there are. Like, it's not like everybody goes to one spot. There's enough spots throughout the whole lakes region where people can get, you know, pretty spread out and you're not on top of each other a lot of times. I mean, there's a lot of places, like there's Emerson Bay on west, Okoboji, Triboji up on the north end. On east Okoboji, there's a couple different spots where everybody kind of congregates to. But you know, another thing there too is, I mean, we hear it all the time. Sometimes if there is a big crowd, you know, get on the edge of that crowd, you know, get away from the crowd, go to try and find some more fish. And I think with forward facing sonar, I think that's, you know, enhanced everybody's ability to do that a little bit more, is to find those fish and get out there and have more confidence in doing it. You don't have to drill a ton of holes anymore. You can just kind of drill a couple and pan around and see if there is fish in the area, and you know, start chasing those.
When you are looking for spots and you're trying to stay away from the crowds, right? Because that's always a good thing if you can help it.
Right.
What are the type of spots that you'd be willing to look at if you were trying to just find a new spot? Somewhere where you probably don't have any waypoints or you don't have any real memories, which might be hard for you to do on those, you know, you've been fishing for a long time down there now, but just say objectively thinking, if you were going to just try something you hadn't seen in a long time, or if there were some spots that you just have never fished before, what would be the type of spots that you would be willing to check out, just in search of fishing, where you're trying to find your own deal and find your own fish?
Well, anytime you can find, like, if there's humps or if there's like transitions from shallow to deep water or deep water to shallow water and stuff like that. I mean, you're going to have fish cruising those a lot of the times. If you can find standing weeds, live weeds, that always seems to, the fish really, you know, kind of go towards the weeds around where we are. There's not a ton of rock in some of those spots. I mean, on Spirit Lake there is, but like Okoboji, so to say, I mean, there is some isolated rock piles and stuff like that. But usually if you can find the weeds, weed edges and that good stuff. And you know, the one of the places that a lot of people overlook is just kind of, if you can, a shallow flat. Sometimes if you can get up on a shallow flat, you can really get into the fish, because a lot of people are concentrating on like the deeper water, or that transition, that 14 to 15 foot of water, where sometimes, you know, you got to go up in the 6-7 foot of water, even shallower sometimes, and you're going to get on some fish.
If you are exploring some new spots, do you feel like you're like, I don't know if you're a forward sonar guy or not, but as far as like breaking it down, especially if you didn't have it, when you're in that shallow, clear water, and you're kind of, whether you can see it or not, you know, we're kind of imagining, or we're learning now that, you know, most fish are kind of spooky. You start drilling, or you're walking around with cleats, or driving track machines, or whatever it is, like how long do you give a spot? How many holes do you drill in your grid or whatever? And you know, how do you kind of operate when you're looking at those shallow
A
flats?
lot of times, like especially in the clear water, I think sometimes I'll give it a little bit longer, because if I come in there and we drill out a bunch of holes and stuff like that, and like you said, the fish might scatter. but they're going to come back. So like if I sit there for, you know, 5-10 minutes and you're not seeing anything, then you're probably going to move. But, you know, usually I give it a little bit longer in the clearer water just for the fact that the fish, and if it does get busy and you're on the edge of a crowd, you know, they're going to start moving around and they're going to push fish towards you a little bit, almost kind of like an old fashioned deer drive, but it's a fish drive when they start moving around and they're going to kind of move. And if you can be in the spot that they're coming, then you could have a lot of success. But as far as like, you know, about that time range, and we'll drill out a lot of holes and just start kind of hopping around from hole to hole. We'll spread out as a group a lot of times too, and see if somebody can get on something and get on a pattern. And then we'll all kind of come into that area and then start looking if there's similar areas on the lake itself, or even in a bay that we're in, and hit up those spots as well.
Yeah, dude. Ice fishing is maybe it always has been, but it's definitely like a team effort.
Oh yeah.
When you really want to get serious about breaking stuff down, is it not? I mean, having what's better than like having your buddies, you know, where everybody's kind of on the same page, and, you know, just like when you can go out there and do it like that. I don't know, man. I feel like maybe I've been missing out on that. I've always been maybe a little bit of a lone wolf. Like my schedule kind of is kind of wonky or opposite of everybody else, you know, that I'm friends with or whatever fish with. So like they're at work or too busy when I can get out fishing, and I always get out there and I'm excited to go fishing that day. But when I'm out there by myself, all of a sudden I become small and the lake becomes really big.
That's a great point. I mean, there's a lot of times that a couple years ago on Okoboji, we were on East and there was a few of us out there and we got onto a good crappie bite and we had the forward facing sonar and we kind of drilled some holes out in the pattern, and one of us would sit on the forward facing sonar and scan around and find them and be like, oh, okay, you know, they're in that hole, right? Go drop in that hole over there. And, you know, people like 3 or 4 of us would go over there to a different hole in that area, and you drop down, you catch a few, and then it would get quiet. So then you'd scan around and we just took turns running the forward facing sonar while the rest of us ran around with our Vexlars and stuff like that and chased them.
That's definitely becoming a thing. And like I said, it probably has since forever. I'm maybe like the only person that's just constantly doing stuff by himself, you know, like if I'm off the clock and I'm just doing my own thing. Yeah. I mean, I fish with Jason. That's about it. Maybe, you know, my wife when she can come out, but she doesn't like come out until I get on some fish, you know, so I can lead her to water, kind of a deal. Fair enough.
Yep.
But yeah, man, I have definitely felt like there's been times where, you know, when you're trying to do some of this stuff by yourself, it'd be way better way more empowering to just have you know, kind of feeling like SEAL Team 6 when you just get like 2, 3, 4, 5 buddies together. It's like a network, right? Like it's kind of priceless to just have a really great network. I feel like that's a great point.
And then on top of it too, like, when you get all your buddies together, sometimes you get to that point where it's like, we're just going to drill some holes right here and we're all just going to flip our shacks over so that we can talk to each other while, you know, fishing right there close to each other, and, you know, give each other grief when you miss, or if somebody hooks into a big fish, everybody's running over there to help them out. I mean, it's just that camaraderie of, you know, that ice fishing does provide sometimes, that sometimes you miss it on open water when you're out there in the boat and there's only 2 or 3 people, where you can have a group of, you know, 10, 12 people all right there together. You got a grill going and grilling some food. I mean, it's just a great time.
If you're still kind of living in that perspective that, you know, you don't want anybody to know where you've been fishing, or you don't want to share, you don't right. want anybody to know where your waypoints are. I feel like we've learned enough about fish that they can be here today and gone tomorrow. And you gotta find fish. You gotta learn, have confidence that you can try to find new fish every day if you're going to have that level of success. You know, I think that, you know, and to be fair, you know, myself included, I've had to kind of graduate out of this, you know, over the last, you know, 10 plus years to it. But it's like, it's definitely a net positive to have a group of, you know, fishing partners that you can work with and have that camaraderie, but also like break down water and, you know, have those productive fishing conversations, and you're all kind of growing and getting better together and learning together, but figuring out how to break down water together, that's just exponentially, and you know, just a net positive over trying to be a lone wolf all the time.
Oh yeah, that's for sure.
I feel like that's a great, that's just like a, I don't know, maybe that's just a great takeaway for me only, I don't know. There's definitely something to that, man. Like, and you'll probably eventually, you'll just appreciate the quality time you spent with your friends.
Yep.
Without even realizing just how important it was to the success of the fishing, you know, I mean, the fish, a good fish catch is always icing on the cake when you're having quality time, which doesn't always mean good weather and having a great right. time. Sometimes you need people to suffer with.
Yep.
You know, like if the conditions are terrible and you yep. just don't want to be out there by yourself, having a good partner out there to keep each other upright so that you keep grinding, and then
yeah, that's for sure.
you can drill the golden hole and catch a bunch of fish, you know, after a hard fought day. And yeah, man, there's a lot to that, dude. There's a lot to that. Well, what else, man? What are some other cool, fun stories about you or about, you know, the fishing down there? You know, anything, yeah, or maybe anything with the podcast, any, you know, fun things that you want to promote or talk about?
Oh, you know, like as far as like what the podcast goes, you know, it's always fun. We call our listeners dirt bags. It's kind of a name they picked for themselves. We always thought, man, we need to have something that our listeners can call themselves. And we kind of put a poll out there the one day and they all decided dirt bags. So now it's like, we'll be places and people will walk up and be like, hey, you dirt bag. And you know, like people that we know are like, what did they just call you? It's like, oh no, that's a good thing, you know, and stuff.
What were the other options in the, I wonder.
Oh, I can't remember, you know, it's so long ago. I can't even remember like what some of the other ones were. And we just kind of, it was always something that Scott would always say was, you know, call people dirt bags and stuff. And he's just like, maybe that's what we need to call them. So then we're like, what do you guys think? And so, yeah, no, I mean, like last year, Jason did come down and stayed at Scott's parents' place out over there in West Okoboji. And we were able to help him film an episode of his show, and that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, he had a lot of fun. I remember him coming back from that. He, for all the things that we're talking about, he loves going down there and fishing like that. And like I said, I filmed a couple episodes for him like way back when, but yeah, he was cheesing after going down there and just fishing down there for those tough clear water fish with you guys. But anyways, not to cut you off, but I just wanted to throw that in.
No, I just feel like, I mean, we like to make fishing fun is like what we really like to do. Sometimes we can all get a little egotistical out there. Like nobody wants to, don't want to talk to anybody. And, you know, you get so focused on it, you forget like why we all enjoy to do it so much and that it is a good time. And, you know, a lot of times you are out there, you know, sometimes you just want the solitude of being alone and stuff like that and just, you know, get away from everything. But, you know, that's one nice thing that I've always given Scott credit for is like, he always likes to know, he'll go up to anybody out on the ice and start talking to them, you know, and pretty soon the next thing you know, it's like, we started off with just three or four of us fishing and it's, hey, come on over here and stuff. And you start meeting new people. I mean, you never know. You might stumble across somebody that owns 1,000 acres of hunting land. And it's like, man, we got all these big deer. We got all these big deer that need to be shot. You guys want to come and do that? I mean, you just never know who you're going to meet out there. So that's just, I mean,
I think that's so true. That is so true, man. That is 100% the mindset that we got to be trying to be in. You know, I think for sure the whole learning how to communicate, there's definitely, you can definitely overshare and,
you know, gotta be able to read the room.
You know, you don't want to do too much, but yeah, there's definitely, I feel like that 100%, man. And those are just, yeah, you just never know who you're going to run into. And that's never bad time spent is when you're out on the water, or maybe you're at a boat landing or whatever. And you know, a little friendly conversation sparks up. You just, you know, you never want to assume too much. You might learn a thing or two from somebody that maybe doesn't look like some sponsored tournament angler or whatever, but you know, maybe they got a little bit rougher looking outfit, but they probably got something figured out. And if you're nice to each other and you have those conversations and you know, same thing. When you're out on the ice, maybe somebody's stuck, you stop and help shovel them out, or maybe they're fishing kind of close to you. Instead of side-eyeing them and you know, thinking negative, you spark up a conversation, and next thing you know, they kind of know a little something about that spot, and you teach each other something, and then you're kind of fishing as a group, and everybody's catching fish, having a great time.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Well, dude, we're really good on time here. I appreciate the time. I love the fishing conversation. I think that, you know, the opportunity to sight fish is a growing thing. Because, you know, there's just no question about it. Like, there's just more and more clear water, you know, just sort of happening everywhere. Some of it's zebra mussel related. Some of it's just this, like out here in the Dakotas, it's not zebra mussels, but it's, you know, we just kind of have some low water.
And some years it fluctuates, you know, some years it's clear, some years it gets a little cloudy. I mean, even down here, the last few years, we've actually had a little bit cloudy water, like where you can't see all the way down. Like you can kind of make out your jig sometimes. I mean, some people think that's like still ultra clear water, but for us, it's like, holy buckets, this water is like really, really murky. But I mean, you can still see your bait. Sometimes you can't see the fish necessarily, but you watch your lure, then all of a sudden it does the old disappear, and you're like, oh, there's one right there. But yeah, the clear water is, if you've never experienced before, you know, try to find a clear body of water and go do some sight fishing. It'll make you a better fisherman.
Yeah. Yeah. And include your electronics, especially if there's a good bite going on, if there's a bunch of fish, especially target species. It will really, really, really help you interpret your electronics. It'll just be a masterclass in interpreting your electronics when you can physically see the fish at the same time. And you see what that looks like on your electronics. That's such a phenomenal point. I'm super, super into that. And I like that shallow flats deal. I think, you know, that's a thing out here for walleyes and perch as well. Just shallow feeding flats, like especially on these reservoirs where you've got a winding creek bed, you know, or a creek channel, and you've got all these point extensions out there, and you just got these, you know, less than 12 foot of water flats, you know, just like there's just a ton of acres of that, you know, on a lot of like reservoirs out here, or even just like shoreline oriented stuff. And I look forward to working out some of those theories for sure. So yeah, man, well, I really, really appreciate it, Matt. I don't know, man, if there's nothing else that comes into mind, I was just excited to kind of sort of meet you here over the phone, get to know you, and just kind of have a conversation like we had about all those things, man. I really, really appreciate it. It should definitely not be the last time. We'll definitely have to do it again, maybe for an open water season, and get a little, give a little love to them smallmouth down there. In the spring or fall or something like that.
No doubt.
I'd be all about that. But if there's nothing else, you know, I mean, I guess we can kind of close it out with promote yourself or, you know, your content or whatever, or anything that you want to throw out there. Go ahead.
Yeah. You can find us on Facebook, the Midwest Angler Podcast, on there. We're on most of the platforms that you can listen to. My name, Matt Deitch, is my, that's my handle on Facebook, and on Instagram. Shoot me a friend request, follow my content. I'm always putting some funny, goofy stuff up there. We're pretty lighthearted guys. So yeah, we appreciate people checking it out.
There it is, man.